Good evening, John. Welcome to the Space Show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
What happens if there's a satellite already up there occupying the slot that I'd like or very close to it, and we can't get agreement between the countries? You know, it's obviously my new satellite's going to be interfering with the older one. Is there any way around that? What role does the ITU play in that?
Well, if there was a proposal to have two satellites sufficiently close together where the interference was not acceptable, and we must remember here that there's no such thing as a no-interference situation. There is a certain level of interference, and we have technical criteria which enable us to determine that it's acceptable or not. So if the positions were too close, and all other things being equal, the regulations as they stand give the priority to the first person there. Now, in a given situation, if you wanted still to persist, you might find you have to move half a degree or a degree in the orbit further away from that existing system. You'd have to make some compromise of this nature in order to get to a level where the interference was acceptable.
And satellite operators can actually position their satellites to that sort of accuracy and keep them on the particular station, can they?
Well, that's so, and in fact, as the regulatory regime that we're responsible to manage has progressed down through the years, we have specifications in the radio regulations on the tolerances permitted for the positions of the satellites in the geostationary orbit. Many years ago, they were able to operate and they had the flexibility of moving to a maximum of plus or minus half a degree from their nominal position. But the recent changes to the regulations have tightened that tolerance to 0.1 of a degree. And this means that it's a discipline, but it enables more satellites to be fitted in. And current technology allows that position accuracy to be maintained without too many problems. And what you must remember is that in the geostationary orbit, satellites are continually moving about. And on board the satellite, there's a fuel source and some thrust motors. And from time to time, the satellite operator is obliged to ignite these motors and move the satellite back to the nominal position as it tends to wander away from its nominal orbital position.
When a satellite ends its life, do they just switch it off, or is there any obligation to move it out of this very precious orbit?
The life of the satellite in modern times tends to depend on two things. The electronics eventually starts to fail. What you must remember, you've got some very complex electronics and other circuitry on board the satellite and no way of going up to service it. And typically satellites have a lifetime of 15 years, and you can imagine the complexity of the redundancy in the equipment on the satellite and the reliability that has to be built in to ensure that it will last for 15 years. The other problem with the life of the satellite is eventually you run out of this station-keeping fuel that I just mentioned. And the recommended practice is, at the time when the fuel is just about to run out, give the satellite the last kick further out from the geostationary orbit and it wanders off into space, and this sort of, if you like, keeps the streets clean up in the geostationary orbit.
Does it ever happen that a satellite goes out of control and can't be switched off and therefore is sort of spewing out these signals in sort of like a...
Pollution.
Pollution, yes.
There have been cases, and the most spectacular one was the recent one with the Mars Observer, which was all set to do what it was planned to do, come down and look at Mars, and the National Aeronautical and Space Administration in the US lost control of the satellite, and the whole thing, where is it? Nobody knows. They're unable to control it. In the context of the geostationary orbit, I don't think we've ever had this sort of problem. I think normally the antennas on board the satellite which receive these telecommand signals are omnidirectional, which permits them to receive the energy from the Earth stations, the signal from the Earth stations, irrespective of the orientation of the satellite. So if the satellite turned around 180 degrees and the normal antennas pointed out into space, there's still this omnidirectional antenna which enables this telecommand signal to be received. So I don't honestly know of any case where this pollution situation arose, but I think there would be sufficient methods available to control it.
Yes, I was thinking of that recent meteor shower and how the Olympus 1 satellite, which hovers over Europe, They lost control of that for several days, but managed to get control of it again, and they decided at that point that it didn't have enough fuel, and the agency then boosted the satellite out of orbit over the last few days. Now, would there have been any chance, say, during that meteorite strike to perhaps knock out the command receiver, but to still have the thing spewing out signals?
Ooh, if this is this is really what if it could happen, I guess. I'm not sure what we'd do in such a case. The Olympus satellite has had a long and faithful history of allowing a lot of experimentation, and it's at the forefront of modern technology in satellites, and many new satellites coming along have benefited from the experiments being carried out with Olympus. I really don't know.
In recent years, there's been a development of the systems here in the Pacific and Asia region. We've seen, for example, AsiaSat, which is now being broadcasting signals into China and much of Southeast Asia. And, of course, Australia itself is using the Palapa satellites, which belong to Indonesia. More and more countries wanting to get into this. Have there been any actual conflicts of interest?
Oh, well, this is a very good question, because if you like, there's been a boom in the importance of satellite communications in this region, and I think it's closely tied with the economic boom that people are seeing in the area, and this aspect in effect is associated, because where there's economic growth and development, there's a need for communications, and we often say that telecommunications is the nervous system for the economy, and the two go together, and often good telecommunications help the economy grow and move along. So there's been lots of people interested in using the geostationary orbit for satellite communications in the area, and there's almost been a rush, you might say, to obtain the orbital positions and frequencies that satellites can use. And we have had, in fact, some difficult situations which are yet to be resolved. There has been one between one of the AsiaSat satellites that you just mentioned and a Thai satellite system. There have been difficulties, but we understand that progress is taking place and that they will be resolved. There has been another occasion which is more difficult again, and the orbital position is 134 degrees east longitude, where we have a proposal from Tonga for a TongaSat satellite, and at the same time the Indonesians are proposing one of their Palapa satellites, which they call Palapa Pacific 1. The difficulty here is that both satellites are seeking to use the same orbital position, to use the same frequency bands, and to serve the same service area in the Asian area. And this is virtually a guarantee for interference issues. Our procedures eventually can resolve this situation, although it becomes very difficult. When the coordination takes place that I mentioned earlier, we are obliged to identify at ITU those countries who have systems with which coordination has to take place. In this particular case, when TongaSat sought to have this coordination take place, we identified Indonesia as an administration which has to be involved, not for the satellite at 134 east, but for another satellite at 118 east. Meanwhile, Indonesia then sought to coordinate the new satellite at 134, and as far as I understand, in discussions, Tonga and Indonesia, Tonga wished to deal only with the relationship between their satellite at 134 and the Indonesian one at 118. However, Indonesia saw the two satellites of theirs as part of the discussion. This happens, as I understand, quite often, where a particular country seeks to resolve issues pertaining to perhaps a number of satellites. But the situation is difficult, and Tonga do have the priority of dates, which is important in this coordination procedure. I know they're still trying to talk to each other whether something will be resolved, or whether Tonga will have to state that they were not able to achieve coordination with Indonesia, and then we proceed to a more complex part of our regulations. That remains to be seen.
Well, thanks for joining us tonight on the Space Show, John, and we hope you have a good and safe trip back to Geneva.
Well, thank you very much. It's going through the northern part of Queensland, so it'll be slow and it'll be pleasant.
Okay, thanks again.